Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo 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 Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 23, Text 6 and 7. This is Kardama Muni speaking to Devahuti. Many thousands of years, because this is Satya Yuga, where duration of life is 100,000 years, long lifetime. So Devahuti has been serving her husband, Kardama Muni, for a long, 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 long time, and with complete selflessness and sacrifice and joyfulness, he's appreciating that spirit of her service and recognizing from his side his indebtedness and her desire to have children, basically, and other things. So he's going to describe to him, to Devahuti, his appreciation for her quality as a good wife and his desire to reciprocate. And not that he hasn't been, but it's, you know, what the dynamic of a qualified husband, qualified wife results in spiritually. Actually, that's one of the main messages here. So Kardama Muni said, "O respectful daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, today I am very much pleased with you for your great devotion and most excellent loving service. Since the body is so dear to embodied beings, I am astonished that you have neglected your own body to use it on my behalf." Purport. It is indicated here that one's body is very dear. Yet Devahuti was so faithful to her husband that she, not only did she serve him with great devotion, service, and respect, but she did not even care for her own health. That is called selfless service. It appears that Devahuti had no sense pleasure, even with her husband. Otherwise, she would not have deteriorated in health. Now, health is not that she was in the hospital or something, but rather, you know, lean and thin and emaciated from the position of her former position as princess with luxuriant this and that and the other thing. So she was living as an ascetic with her ascetic husband, and her body showed it. Acting to facilitate Kardama Muni's engagement in spiritual elevation, she continually assisted him, not caring for her bodily comfort. It is the duty of a faithful and chaste wife to give her husband, to help her husband in every respect, especially when the husband is engaged in Krishna consciousness. In this case, the husband also amply rewarded his wife, rewarded the wife. The last sentence is curious. Prabhupada writes, "This is not to be expected by a woman who is the wife of an ordinary person." So maybe we're ordinary persons. So wives don't expect this from your husbands. He doesn't explain what he means by that. And so, in other words, a devotee is not an ordinary person. An ordinary person is one who's not a devotee. So those women whose husbands are not devotees cannot expect this kind of reciprocation between husband and wife. Something like that. Because another way it could mean is Karva Muni is superlative in his quality, character, and Krishna consciousness. And consequently, he was able to reciprocate with Devahuti in a way that the rest of us who aren't so super excellent are not able to fulfill. That's another way it could mean. Come on up front. You got a front row seat. Look at this. We saved a mat for you and everything. Oh, he likes this chair. Okay. Come on up here. Right here. Okay. So, although he's a transcendentalist, I mean completely transcendental, being a complete transcendentalist doesn't mean being oblivious to the demands of the body and the carrying of the conception of I am this body. After all, it's husband and wife. In order to have the relationship of husband and wife, there has to be some sense of bodies. So he's a fully matured transcendentalist, and his wife is partaking of his quality by serving him. That's what we're going to hear in the next verse. But even so, characteristically or traditionally, the body is very dear. In the sixth canto, there's a really curious section where Indra, after offending Brihaspati on the heavenly planets, Indra was having a big festival to honor himself. Indra Puja and Indra Loka. And there were singers and dancers and festivities and brahmanas and everyone glorifying Indra up to the sky. And Brihaspati came in the midst of the assembly and noticed that Indra didn't even notice. He was filled with himself. So Brihaspati didn't bother. He just turned around and left the assembly, and he left Indraloka. And the party went on, and at the end of the day, Indra's getting ready to take rest, and his wife said, didn't you notice? Brihaspati came, and you ignored him, and he felt offended, and he left. You're in big trouble. So Indra panicked and started searching for Brihaspati everywhere and couldn't find Brihaspati. Sent messengers, search parties. Brihaspati wasn't to be found. And bad news travels fast. The daityas, they heard Brihaspati left. And so Shukracharya put two and two together real fast and said, you know what that means. Brihaspati is the source of the protection of the demigods, and he's gone. You know what that means. Get your weapons. Go and attack, and you'll easily defeat them. So they did, and Indra was easily defeated. So Indra went to Lord Brahma. Help! We lost our kingdom. you lost your kingdom. The reply is, you lost your kingdom because you offended your spiritual master and he just departed you. And you do these things, Indra. You have pride. It can catch you in trouble. But a solution that I can offer is that temporarily you can approach Vishwarup to become your Purohit, your performer of Vedic sacrifices. Anyway, it's a long description. Vishwarup was the son of Tvashta, and Tvashta was exceptionally qualified, and approach him and he'll help you. So Indra went to Vishwarup. Vishwarup was reluctant. There's detail. But then he answered and satisfied his concerns, and he became the priest of the demigods, like fill-in priest. So with his skill, he taught Indra how to, by mantra, create a protective armor where he would be not defeated by the Daityas. Narayana Kavacha mantra, it's a whole chapter. And it's, you know, essentially the same thing that we do when we apply Tilak, by touching different parts of the body, saying mantras that include names of Vishnu, asking for Vishnu to protect this part, Vishnu to protect that part, and after calling the names of the Supreme Lord as one's protector, the different limbs of the body were protected, then he had a mantra, Kavacha. And Indra was very happy, and he went back, did battle with the Daityas, and they were defeated. So he got his kingdom back. He's very happy. You know, notice, happy, sad, happy, then comes sad again, then comes... So that's the nature of material circumstance. It's happiness and sadness alternating, impermanent both, and insubstantial. So he has his kingdom back, and he understands now that Vishwarup is really qualified, superlatively qualified. So he asks Vishwarup, I understand that you know how to produce soma rasa by Vedic sacrifice. Can you produce some soma rasa for us, demigods? So he does. But without telling Indra, he also, by mantra, makes some soma rasa available for his father's wife's associates and family members. And Tvashta, a detail, Tvashta married a Daitya Brahmani. So when Indra found out, because when the Brahmanas say mantras, they say them so fast you don't even know what they're saying. But he knew what he was saying, and he was providing soma rasa to the Brahmanis from the Daitya dynasty. So he became so angry, he took his sword and cut off Vishwarup's head. He lost it. Then he was in big trouble, big reaction for killing a Brahmana. So he, a number of things happened, but he was sent much later. He was sent by Lord Vishnu to a reaction that was Tvashta created a demon named Vritrasura, and Vritrasura came to destroy Indra and Indra's, you know, whole entourage. So big battle, and then Indra goes to Lord Vishnu, help! Lost my kingdom. What do I do? Help! Indra, you did it again. You do this. You pride and anger and these qualities that are unbecoming of an elevated person. But here's what you can do. You go to Dadichi. Ask Dadichi for his bones. And Dadichi is very generous. He's known to be very generous, and he'll give you his bones. You take those bones to Vishwakarma. Vishwakarma will make a weapon by which you can defeat Vitrasura. So Indra's happy again. He goes to Dadichi and asks Dadichi for his bones. And Dadichi said, Indra, what are you asking? Don't you know that the body is the most near and dear thing to everyone? And you're asking for my body? Please consider what you're asking. Just following the, you know, what Karna Muni is saying, everyone considers the transcendentalist. Here's Dadichi speaking. A transcendentalist, a fully liberated soul, but he's speaking as if he's not. And the body is the most near and dear thing to everybody. Indra's very clever. Indra said, what you say is true. And great saintly people, their happiness is simply the utilization of everything, body, mind, and words, in the service of others. And here is an opportunity requested and suggested by Lord Vishnu where you can serve the demigods and arrange for the demigods to regain their kingdom. You can use your body for that. You're a saintly person. This is a great opportunity. So let's have your bones, please. And Dadichi said, I was just testing you. Certainly you can have my bones. And he sat in a trance of meditation and just gave up his body. Doesn't say where he went, but he went somewhere and the body just sitting there, and now they have his bones. Took the bones to Vishwakarma. Vishwakarma fashioned a special thunderbolt weapon from Dadichi's bones, which was then the means of defeating Vritrasura. So just a little detour on and confirmation of everyone considers their body the most important thing. And you, Devahuti, have sacrificed the body simply for service. And that service has been to assist me in my service to the personality of Godhead. So I'm very moved as he's expressing his gratitude and the reason for his gratitude. Text 7, Kardamuni continued, I have achieved the blessings of the Lord in discharging my own religious life of austerity, meditation, and Krishna consciousness. Although you have not yet experienced these achievements, which are free from fear and lamentation, I shall offer them all to you because you are engaged in my service. Now just look at them. I'm giving you the transcendental vision to see how nice they are. Interesting, huh? Purport. Devahuti engaged only in the service of Kardama Muni. She was not supposed to be so advanced in austerity, ecstasy, meditation, or Krishna consciousness, but imperceptibly, she was sharing in her husband's achievements, which she could neither see nor experience. Automatically, she achieved these graces of the Lord. Paragraph. What are the graces of the Lord? It is stated here that the graces of the Lord are abhaya, free from fearfulness. In the material world, if someone accumulates $1 million, he is always full of fear because he is always thinking, what if the money is lost? But the benedictions of the Lord, Bhagavat Prasad, is never to be lost. It is simply to be enjoyed. There is no question of loss. One simply gains and enjoys gaining. Bhagavad Gita also confirms this. When one achieves the grace of the Lord, the result is that sarva dukkhani, all distresses, are destroyed. When situated in the transcendental position, one is freed from the two kinds of material diseases, hankering and lamenting. Hankering and lamenting. Passion and ignorance. Two kinds of diseases. This is also stated in Bhagavad Gita. After devotional life begins, we can achieve the full result of love of Godhead. Love of Krishna is the highest perfection of Bhagavat Prasad, or divine mercy. Thus, this transcendental achievement is so greatly valuable that no material happiness can compare it to it. Prabodhananda Saraswati said that if one achieves the grace of Lord Chaitanya, he becomes so great, he does not care a fig. Even for the demigods, he thinks of monism as hellish, and for him the perfection of controlling the senses is as easy as anything. Heavenly pleasures become to him no more than stories. Actually, there is no comparison between material happiness and transcendental happiness. This whole paragraph is just saying the graces of the Lord that go to a devotee of the Lord, Bhagavat Prasad, what are they? Can't be compared to anything material, is his point. And so two features, abhay, finished with hankering, lamenting, no fear, because there's no material shelter. We discussed this yesterday. Akinchana, yesterday, midday. Akinchana gochara and akinchana what's the other term? Anyway, having no material shelter. Akinchana vitaya. Last paragraph. By the grace of Kardama Muni, Devahuti experienced actual realization simply by serving. We get a similar example in the life of Narada Muni. In his previous life, Narada Muni was a maidservant's son, but his mother was engaged in the service of great devotees. He got the opportunity to serve the devotees, and simply by eating the remnants of their foodstuffs and carrying out their orders, he became so elevated in his next life, he became the great personality Narada. For spiritual achievement, the easiest path is to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and to serve him with heart and soul. That is the secret of success. As stated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his 8 stanzas of prayer to the spiritual master, Yasya Prasadat Bhagavat Prasada, by serving or receiving the grace of the spiritual master, one receives the grace of the Supreme Lord. By serving his devotee husband, by serving her devotee husband, Kardama Muni, Devahuti shared in his achievements. Similarly, a sincere disciple, simply by serving a bona fide spiritual master, can achieve all the mercy of the Lord and the spiritual master simultaneously. So, the reciprocation, although previously unspoken, apparently, or at least, we don't know of, over all those years, what Kardama Muni was saying to Devahuti about his appreciation for her service. At least here we know he's saying. that whether spoken or unspoken, implicitly, the faithful servant, that is, the wife serving the husband or the disciple serving the spiritual master, the faithful servant receives blessings or benedictions or mercy, spiritual qualification, just through the medium of that service. So when need not, there's no harm to say, please give your blessings. But the point being made is the blessings are there regardless of one asks for blessings or doesn't ask for blessings. The blessings are included. That is to say, that a qualified person like Kardama Muni, or here this other example that Prabhupada is incorporating, the spiritual master, are those who one is serving. Their qualification is at once tacitly, spontaneously transmitted to the servant. The servant shares in the merit of the person served just by the medium of service. That's the law. That's a good spiritual law. It's how it works. So what does that mean practically? One may not be qualified. And I think probably a safe self-assessment is to consider, I'm not so qualified. And now, is that a disqualification for getting mercy? No. Simply reposing the whatever capacity one has to serve on a qualified person to serve, and the qualifications of the person being served go to the person who is serving. The unqualified becomes qualified. Clear. And karma is saying that to Devahuti. You don't have the eyes to see the merit that you have already received and that has come to me from my austerities and devotional service and so forth. But now I'm going to show it to you, and you're going to like it very much. So there's we use these two terms, aprakat and prakat, unmanifest and manifest. Whether unmanifest or manifest, spiritual merit is substantial, palpable. As he's saying here, nice to look at. Whether you can see or not see. And one who has that basic feature of faith, whether one sees or doesn't see, if one has faith, then the process of devotional service acts even more, ever more powerfully. Supposing one doesn't have faith, just like a nice example is chanting. Supposing one doesn't know what chanting is, when they chant. This happens in yoga classes. People chant, they don't know what it is. Or we go in Harinam in the public and they chant, they don't know what it is. And they hear it, or they even may chant along with us. We give them a card and they chant along with us, they don't know what it is. It's not like they have faith that I'm getting transcendental merit by chanting. They like the melody and they like the rhythm and it's fun, so they chant. Something like that. Spiritual merit goes to them, for sure. Now, when there's faith, all the more merit goes to the person who chants with faith. There's a very beautiful song, I'll just summarize it quickly, written by Bhaktivinod Thakur, where he's describing that Lord Chaitanya gave the service or the assignment to Lord Nityananda to go throughout the whole of Bengal and give the holy name And the language, I don't know Bengali, but those that do, the language of the song says, so Nityananda went and established in the marketplace of the holy name. And the word that's used is Nama Hatta. Literally it means the marketplace of the holy name. And he set up franchises. I don't know what the word in Bengali is, but its English equivalent is a franchise. So we know what franchise is. And the franchisees, he told them, you can take this goods, the holy name, and you can sell it, but you have to ask for a price. And the price is faith. And anyone who gives faith, however much, you give them the product, the holy name. Nice, huh? So that's the price to get. He is the deliverer not only of the name, but the pure holy name. And the pure holy name is Shuddha Nam. We're not there. We're at Namabhas. We're chanting, but not purely yet. And trying to avoid offenses, Nama Bharat. So that's the Namabhas stage. But the Shuddha Nam stage, pure holy name, the price to go from where we are to where we want to go is faith. And Devahuti, being elevated and cultured personality, she chose her husband and chose to take the position of simply serving her husband. And for that, spiritual merit was being transferred invisibly. Although her body looked, you know, lean and thin. And, you know, not like a princess should look. But spiritual merit was going to her. Now he's saying, I'm going to show you what that spiritual merit is, and you're going to like it very much. So the position of devotional service, knowing or unknowing, is very beneficial. Knowing is better. Unknowing is also very good. Unknowingly, people engage in devotional service. Agata Sukriti. Unknowingly engage in devotional service. I spoke yesterday with Nityananda Prabhu, who is the president of the Dallas Temple, and yesterday had their Rath Yatra. So I called him when they were having their Rath Yatra. There's all this noise going on in the background. What's going on? Rath Yatra. And so they have it right in their neighborhood. They go somewhere around the block or whatever they do. And then they have a lawn next to the temple, and they're having the festival in the lawn. And people from the neighborhood come, and they don't know. It's a party. But they see Lord Jagannath, they hear the holy name, they take Krishna Prasadam, and you know, they like the music. And so their spiritual life is beginning unknowingly. It's nice. And then unknowing and unknowing and unknowing and unknowing, it eventually accumulates, agyata sukriti accumulates, so that then knowingly they can accept the position of rendering some service. Unknowingly they may, you know, stand in their prasadam line and serve out prasadam because they think this is nice, you people are doing a good thing, I'll help you serve out your food. But there, it's devotional service. And, you know, pick up the trash or whatever people do, and, you know, some devotional service. Their spiritual life begins by those methods. So if one has the good fortune, as Devahuti had the good fortune of associating with a great devotee, then one gets great spiritual merit. And the concluding point that Prabhupada is making in the purport, and I'll end also with this, similarly with the spiritual master, the principle of serving great souls, mahat sevam dvara mahur vimuktes, according to Rishabhdev, the gate, dvaram, to liberation, dvaram ahur vimuktes, is the service to great souls. That's the doorway. into transcendence is serving great souls. With faith, by doing so, not like I got your calculator out, okay, I'm going to get this much merit. It's just in principle. Good fortune will come into my life, and it means specifically also spiritual good fortune. I'll be spiritually benefited by this. It's certainly the spiritual master is mentioned, but it's any personality, spiritual master or otherwise, that's a spiritually elevated soul. We render service and we receive. It's good for us. Good for Krishna is pleased, and we receive spiritual benefit by doing that. And then our material existence slackens and eventually dissolves. Our entanglement in the affairs of material existence. We can still carry out our duties in Krishna consciousness, but the entanglement in the affairs of material existence subside. The hankering and the lamenting of material existence subside. We still do service. The material aspect is diminished. This hard struggle for material existence. And the happiness of serving Krishna takes its place. Okay, any discussion or questions? Yes?
That's really wonderful class, Maharaj. Like a small doubt, Maharaj. Like doing things, doing services knowingly or unknowingly. In the condition, like I did hear that like Narada Muni, was serving those rishis, and then like he got elevated in his next life as a transcendental body of Narada Muni. So there was no manually they had given any piety to Narada Muni, and then he got elevated. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj, I heard from someone like in his previous life, unknowingly he was trying to associate with the women in a temple. And then, like in his next life, he
not in a temple, not in a temple. But any case, go ahead.
So he
unknowingly did some service, and he was benefited.
Yeah, unknowingly he did. So why this? I'm not getting the name of the muni that we are talking about right now.
Karnama.
Karnama muni. Why manually he had to give the piety to?
He didn't. He didn't have to manually do anything. It was automatically transferred. He's now giving her darshan of that. It was already hers, but she was unable to see it, recognize it. Now he's going to benefit her so she can see it, recognize it, and appreciate it. It was already transferred. Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else? Yes?
Dadiki giving up his bones.
Yeah.
Did he know that there is the will of the Lord? Like
yes, yes. Vishnu had sent them. Does that answer your question?
Yes. And small, little annex to that is. He knows it is
the Dichi.
The Dichi knows the will of the Lord.
Yes.
And knowing, also knowing the plot of Indra.
I'm listening. What's the question?
So, sometimes some people approach with the ulterior motives for some help, but when I feel it like it is helping in some service to Krishna, I tend to do that. So, and I'm having a doubt whether is it like people pleasing or am I really being an instrument in that service?
Depends on the circumstance. It's a good question to ask, but it depends on the circumstance. And it also depends on consciousness, two things. Something else? Yes.
Simply by serving one branches in their anointing.
Mm-hmm.
There is in the beginning you have read that Devakuti served selflessly.
Mm-hmm.
So simply serving on the instructions spiritual master to the stage of selfless service, is this the degree of purity that takes place? Or what's selfless service means? Like in this case, Devakuti wasn't even caring for herself.
Well, selfless service is simple. It means without the calculation of what's in it for me. Selfish is what's in it for me. And selfless is without that calculation. Does that answer your question?
Still something in the background. I'm doing this service, so I'm...
And it's mixed. And it's not fully selfless. And it's not fully selfish. It's mixed.
So that means there's a lack of purity.
Well, it's not... It's an indication of... So what to do is the next question. Focus on service to Krishna. And that will serve as a cleansing of the heart to come to the stage of purity so that it becomes selfless just for Krishna. That's bhakti. Duty and love are not on the same platform. One may lead to the other, but they're not on the same platform. And one can't be expected to start on the topmost platform. One starts where one is. You start wherever you are. Practical. So wherever I am, let me begin. And minimally, for sake of purification, this is the mode of goodness, according to later in this canto, the son of Kardava Muni, Kapila Dev, speaks to Devahuti that devotional service in goodness is characterized by doing out of duty, serving out of duty. It is to be done, and so I do. I'm truthful. I don't tell lies because you should be truthful. I don't steal because it's not to be done. We should be honest, and so forth. It's mode of goodness. And devotional service in that mode of goodness leads to transcendence. It leads to love. But they're not on the same platform. So you begin where you are. Is that all right?
So even if one considers it not so intelligent to take initiative, but just aspiring for that, that number of so the intelligence is given by...
When we chant, we're asking Krishna for service. Asking Radharani for Krishna's service. And with that, it means the service mood or attitude or aptitude is being strengthened. Reciprocation for which is service. And as that service mood and aptitude or attitude matures and grows, it becomes love. But initially, it's duty. And the duty is also mixed with, you know, some expectation. Although we're taught one should perform devotional service without expectation. We have that thing, mode of passion. We want a result. We're expecting something. Some whatever that something is that, that our mentality tells us is important to us. We want appreciation. We want recognition. We want whatever we want. We want something. And that's the beginning. So it's not like, shame on you, you have a want. It's just where one's beginning. And then as the bhakti becomes stronger, stronger, that wanting diminishes and it's replaced with simply wanting Krishna's happiness. Love. Love comes as a natural byproduct of duty, but they're not on the same platform. Okay. Yes. How it manifests. Our attention is, you know, it's the selfishness, the attention is upon me. It's subtle, or it can become not so subtle, it can become unpleasantly gross, but its attention is on me. How, you know, look at me, or whatever it is, that's the nature of one's ego. A symptom that it's not ego-less is when circumstances are like Indra, circumstances are favorable, one is very enthused. And circumstances are challenging, one becomes discouraged. One's enthusiasm level goes up and down based on external circumstances. And a transcendental feature is that it's not circumstance created. Chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita. You know, the mind is indifferent to duality. Enthusiasm is spiritual. That's a symptom of transcendental consciousness. Not created or inhibited by material. Ahituki pratyata. You know the verse. Yatma supersedati. Without hetu, ahituki, without causation, circumstance-generated enthusiasm, and pratyata, enthusiasm that can't be checked by circumstance. That's a symptom. And you can say, you know, the question was, what are the symptoms of that, you know, mixed consciousness is where, you know, your enthusiasm is circumstantial. Sometimes this, sometimes that. Unsteady. That's the stage that comes prior to steady. And in between the two is purification, eradication of unwanted things. And the cleansing agent that takes away the unwanted things is the practice itself, sincerely performed practice. Bhakti creates bhakti. And that displaces the impurity. So keep exercising your bhakti muscle to become strong bhakta. Yes?
Slightly different kind of questions. So we understand, you know, it's a lot easier to understand when you have devas and in kingdom of the devas, the Indra and all the stuff. So when you have asuras or the daityas, and also they've been able to what is the goal of it? I mean, even they are on
the goal of which?
Of the asuras. what does it actually represent in spiritual matter, for instance?
What is it that they're wanting? Is that your question?
Yes, what is the evolution of that? I mean, if you have, a person...
Trying to understand your question.
A person born as a human, his natural progression is by spiritual path you become... You get elevated to higher planes and spiritually get evolved, right? But on the opposite spectrum, you have the asura and the examples that you just gave. So, but even they are in spiritual mode doing, even there they have brahmanas and doing doing their austerities,
yes.
So what is that and why? Seems to me like that
it's very simple. It's really simple. Listen carefully. I'll start with this and go to your question. The distinction between material and spiritual. Material is, the spiritual is seeing God within everything, or the presence of God, the connection of all things with God. That's spiritual. Material is not seeing the connection with God. Things just exist with no connection with God. God disappears. Godlessness. That's material. So now, to your question. The Daityas, they also have formulas and rituals and so forth, and they're godless. It's mechanical. To achieve something, I do this and I get that, like a vending machine. And there are persons that are proficient in the rituals without God consciousness, without depending upon God or the demigod. They're just rituals that by performing them, some power is achieved and they use the power for a godless purpose. Read in Bhagavad Gita the divine and demoniac nature and it'll further illuminate your question. Now they have strong determination. Just like, let's take as one example, Jarasandha. Jarasandha was God-fearing or godless? Godless. He was making Krishna his enemy. So that's...
I didn't know.
Huh?
I didn't know about
Jarasandha. Well, you know Kamsa.
Yes.
Okay. So Kamsa's brother-in-law was Jarasandha. Kamsa's two wives were Jarasandha's daughters. Does that make him brother-in-law?
No.
Father-in-law. Okay. So when Kamsa was killed by Krishna, the two wives of Kamsa went back to their father. Ah! Daddy! Kamsa was killed. Take revenge. So he took a vow to destroy Krishna and the whole Yadu dynasty. And he tried 21 times and he failed every time. Later, the 22nd time when he came, long story, told it yesterday, he ganged up with Kalyavana. So Kalyavana's army plus Jarasandha's army invaded Mathura. Kill Krishna. You with me?
Yeah.
So, at the end, with skipping many nice things, Krishna entered onto the battlefield and he ran. So Jarasandha pursued him. And with Balaram, they went up a mountain. And Jarasandha thought, I got him. So he started a fire to burn so they would, destroy them. He thought, I killed them. But Krishna and Balaram jumped from the mountain, had a nice ride, and then from there, from Mathura, they went to Dwarka. So Krishna is now residing in Dwarka. Kamsa's feeling, oh, even though I was defeated 21 times, now I'm victorious. So he's a powerful demoniac person. When it came, fast forward, it came time for the Rajasuya ceremony. And the advice that was given by Uddhava was, before you perform the Rajasuya ceremony, you have to remove all the opposing kings, and Jarasandha is still opposing. So you have to defeat Jarasandha. He was very powerful, practically invincible. So Krishna made a plan. He said, let us go disguised as brahmanas. So it was Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhima, three of them. Bhima, Arjuna, and Krishna went disguised as brahmanas to Jarasandha's place, his palace. They went as brahmanas because it was known that Jarasandha was charitable to brahmanas. He's a demon because he's godless, but he was very powerful. But he observed charity to brahmanas. So they went disguised as brahmanas and came before him requesting charity. He said, my dear men, you have shoulders like powerful warriors. So I think that you're disguised as brahmanas. But nonetheless, because you're disguised as brahmanas, I'll give you whatever charity you like. And they said, the charity we would like is we'd like to engage in battle with you, combat. He said, now I understand what's going on. That big one over there, that's Bhima. And that black one over there, that's Krishna. He's a coward. He ran from the battlefield. And Arjuna, he's like, you know, he's insignificant. So I'll fight with that one, Bhima. So the purpose was securing from him combat. But the plea was charity to a brahmana. Because he observed charity to a brahmana. So now your question was, what's the program here? How do they have brahmanas and charity to brahmanas and rituals if they're daityas? They have another purpose. The purpose is getting power and using that power, read chapter, the Divine and Demoniac chapter, through this austerity, I will destroy people. And you'll find another reference in the same section I already mentioned, where Kardama Muni is saying, religious activity that's performed in the mode of ignorance, which sounds like a contradiction, but it, you know, people do rituals and religious performances to destroy their enemy. People they consider friends, enemies, and my enemies I want to destroy, so I do something that's, you know, like black magic or some ritual or some austerity or something so I can destroy my enemy. Not godly. It's a mode of ignorance. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Those are three references I mentioned to you.
So, if you do it mechanically, so what is that principle which actually guarantees results for it?
It depends. That which is elevating is going to serve regardless of one's motivation and regardless of one's understanding of what it is. But how it will act depends upon one's understanding and one's consciousness. Just like, let's take this example, observing Ekadasi. You know what Ekadasi is. So supposing somebody doesn't know what Ekadasi is and they don't eat grains and other bad things on Ekadasi for whatever the reason. Whatever the reason, they get spiritual merit. But supposing their consciousness is now different, is I'm a material elevationist, I want to observe Ekadasi, so I'll get material elevation. I know what Ekadasi is, you know, I have some idea what Ekadasi is anyways, it's an auspicious day, and I want to take advantage of this auspicious day to get some material benediction. So I'll observe this ritual, that ritual, according to the formularies, and I'll accrue piety so I can get some material benefit. One gets material benefit. Not spiritual benefit. One gets material benefit because that's one's consciousness. And then there's a third person who understands this is a great opportunity to advance in devotion to Vishnu. So I'll observe Ekadasi and I'll hear the message of Vishnu. He'll glorifications of, you know, Harikatha, and one gets spiritual merit. Same activity, three different kinds of consciousness. Take the example of giving charity to a brahmana. There's Jarasandha, and then there's a Vaishnava who understands it's pleasing to Krishna. That's their consciousness. So one gets something and the other gets a different something. Same activity.
But at that point, even he would not have known who Krishna is.
Who?
Right? Jarasandha would not have known who actually Krishna was. How would he know?
He didn't, because that's knowable only to one who has bhakti. He didn't have bhakti, so he didn't know who Krishna was. As far as he was concerned, he's just an enemy. A tricky guy who's got some powers, but I've got some powers, and I'm more powerful than that tricky guy. He didn't know who Krishna was, because you need bhakti to know who Krishna is.
But since he was already doing some service, what happened to him? What is the end result? Of course, he would be defeated.
Yeah, he got liberated. That's what happened. In the presence of Krishna, he lost his soul, departed from his body. He got liberated. He was inimical. He was Krishna conscious, but not a devotee. He was thinking of Krishna, let me kill him.
So isn't this like, this might sound tricky, but if a person is 50% evil wicked guy, he might go to hell. If he's 100% evil guy, which brings, who actually can pick a fight with Krishna, he gets liberated.
Well, it's not just a wicked guy, because I can think of some wicked guys that don't think of Krishna. We give some names, but we don't need to give some names. People that are really wicked, they don't think of Krishna. They don't go to heaven. They don't go to Krishna. They don't get liberation. They go to hell. But Kamsa and Jarasandha and Shishupal, they were thinking of Krishna. So the object is supremely pure. Their attitude is awful, but the object is supremely pure, and so they become purified, although their attitude is awful. But somebody just wicked, just plain wicked, and not thinking of God at all, they have another destination. It's tricky, as you say. But in one sense, it's blatant. It's just, where's Krishna in the picture? Where is the supreme pure? If one is so much down in the mode of darkness, they cannot think of Krishna. They're so unfortunate. It's downwards. But if that good fortune is even their, very bad people, if Krishna comes into their consciousness, they're purified. They're benefited. Even their bad people. Yudhisthira asks this question. It's right on target with what you're asking. When Shishupal is killed by Krishna Sudarshan Chakra, you know the story? It's Rajasuya, and Bhishma Dev is honoring Krishna, and Shishupal can't stand it. She jumps up in the assembly and starts blaspheming Krishna right in the whole public assembly. Bhima grabs his club and is going to bonk him on the head and finish him. And Krishna stops him. Until 100 times he speaks something nasty about Krishna, invoking his name, and Krishna, with the Sudarshan Chakra, separates the talking part of his body from the rest of his body. And everybody in the assembly sees the soul of Shishupal go into the air, hover for some moments, and then enters into the body of Krishna. After they clean up the bloody mess and continue with the Rajasuya Yajna, at the end, it's right in the Bhagavatam, Yudhisthira is asking Narada Muni, how did this happen? He's such a nasty person. Bad. Vilifying Krishna like this. How did it happen? they're great sages. They try for that liberation and they can't. Lifetimes. Great austerities. Try and nothing happens. Good people. They're not nasty. They don't get liberation. He got liberation. How did it happen? Narada's answer is just see the power of the holy name. Even in scorn and derision, its power is there. What to speak of one chants Krishna's name with faith? You'll find it in Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning of 7th canto. So, the power of thinking of Krishna relieves one of so many unwanted things. Directly. Even unknowingly. The power is still there, unknowingly. The sun is hot, whether you know it's hot or not. Fire burns, whether you know it burns or not. Okay, I think I'm going to end. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki. Yes. Yeah.